In this episode, I meet John Williams from AWP. John's passion for mental health patients and his recognition of the power of relationships across the partnership really shines through in this episode. It was so good to hear the anecdotal but all important benefits these relationships can bring to day-to-day practices in the experience of John working with people and patients across the partnership. I think you're really going to enjoy this episode. Can you do me a favour if you're listening to this? Please press the follow or subscribe button. It will support spreading the partnership message far and wide. It helps more than you know.
My first career was in quantitative surveillance training. If people can gain a diagnosis for dementia earlier on, it gives the professionals better opportunity to help them. I don't think I've ever felt a more positive change in terms of the relationships between organisations. We had that situation not so long ago, and I called up my colleague in Serona and said, can you help us with this? Yes, not a problem. I'll put you in touch with so-and-so. And it was resolved within a week, pretty much. The more we speak with our colleagues from partnerships, the more we understand what their organisations offer and can't offer and how we can problem solve together. The fulfilment it gives me working in these services, because more often than not, you see and meet people who are desperate and not filled with a lot of hope, and you can quite literally see people come out the other side.
So without further ado, I am David Moss, and this is the Partnership Podcast, improving our collective understanding of communities, organisations and partnership, brought to you by staff, for staff who are working to keep people well and healthy.
So welcome to episode 6 with John Williams in Windmill House, I think this is called, in Clevedon in North Somerset. Welcome, John.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
No worries. So as with most of these conversations, I'd just like to start with a little bit about yourself, if we can, and where you've grown up, come from, how you ended up working in a mental health organisation, and where you are today, if that's possible.
Yeah, of course. You might guess later on from the interview, I'm from the Rhondda Valleys in Wales. My first career was in quantity surveying. I started training to be a quantity surveyor. I really didn't get on with the office type job, working in the same office with 6 people day in, day out. So I decided to leave and went to the nursing college and made up my mind pretty much there and then what sort of nursing I wanted to do. Fell on mental health nursing. So I've been doing that around 25 years now.
Wow.
And most of my career I spent in inpatients. So I was a matron before I worked in the community, which I've done for about the last 3.5 years.
Fabulous. And how did you end up on mental health? Was there a family incident or something that drew you to that, or just...
Not particularly, no. So I've got quite a heavy nursing presence in my family, my sisters, my mum, my aunt, all nurses. So thinking back 25 years, as I said, I literally went to the nursing college and I said, what sort of nurse do you want to be? And there were 4 signs and I said...
Mental health.
I chose mental health.
Fabulous. And the role you're in today, should we just explain to the listener sort of your role here at Avon Wiltshire Partnership as part of the Mental Health Trust here in North Somerset?
Yeah, so I'm the clinical lead for older people's mental health and VNSSG for AWP. That's kind of setting the strategy for the direction we want services to travel in the future.
And what does that mean? So for somebody who's working in the voluntary sector or out visiting people on a befriending service or working in a care home, what do we mean?
So I'd say in the system, mental health provision is quite a tiny partner when compared with the other organisations that we work with. So yeah, we're a much smaller partner than the acute trusts around us.
Yeah.
And you can kind of use that to give yourself a perspective of the amount of people that we deal with in mental health services. So if you think that you take dementia, for example, there's probably thousands of people in BNSSG who have that diagnosis.
Yeah.
We see a tiny proportion of those people. So it's when people with that illness really struggle to live a meaningful life. They come to us usually in periods of crisis.
And we were talking before we started this conversation about how general practice is being encouraged to diagnose dementia, part of its role in our system here in North Somerset. And you explained to me, and I'll let you explain again because it'll be somewhat easier, how that has an important role to be joining up with the sorts of services that you're offering to dementia patients here.
Yeah, so usually if people can gain a diagnosis for dementia earlier on. It gives the people, professionals, better opportunity to help them manage their lives and their illness as it goes on. So, for example, I think it's really difficult for families and carers to prepare themselves for the journey that they're about to embark on. Yeah. So, yeah, you can, in quite some detail, give the families and carers of people with that diagnosis quite a lot of information and preparation for how they can deal with situations as they come up. You can also give the person who's got the diagnosis some ideas and some strategy about how they're going to manage the symptoms and the change, you know, the significant changes to their life that's about to happen to them.
Really helpful, and sort of contextualizes the roles of the different partners within, particularly for North Somerset, a population that's aging and has numbers of comorbidities. There's some evidence in there for that. Those other mental health services in North Somerset, are we able to just touch on those and help the listener understand what else AWP, as our mental health partner, is providing in North Somerset?
Yeah, absolutely. So probably a good idea to start at the front of the service. So people usually get referred into AWP from primary care, from the GPs, and quite a lot of the time through ED, the emergency department. So we've got an assessment service that sits at the front, so they can see everybody that's referred into AWP. If needed, they can do short pieces of work with them to try and manage them, their illnesses. And from there, if AWP take them on, they'll go into a number of different services. So we've got a recovery team.
Okay.
Generally, not always, that kind of works with people between 18 and 65. We call them our adults of working age. And there's also another team called EI, which works alongside recovery as early intervention. So that's a team that was commissioned some time ago by the government. We can see someone with a diagnosis of psychosis. You can work with them in a non-medicalized way. So again, giving people strategies and management techniques to manage their symptoms, their illnesses as they grow older. Another team that works alongside recovery is the ROSE team. So that's, again, a small team that works with people with severe and enduring mental health problems, who sometimes services have difficulty in engaging and whose symptoms are quite difficult to manage, both for themselves and for services.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of the teams in the adults of working age. We've also got older people services. We've got a complex intervention team, abbreviated to SIT, and we've got a care home liaison team, an enhanced dementia support team, and a memory service as well.
Fabulous. There's quite an offer, and I'm getting a sense a lot of this is responding to need and not able to get to the prevention agenda as easy as we might all want. And it's been quite a turn for mental health in some of the long-standing stigma, and that tide seems to be turning. Are you feeling that within the services? Are you sensing that it's being prioritised? You mentioned it wasn't equal with physical health in terms of the size of the organisation and teams for the need that's out there.
Yeah, and I think as we were talking before the interview, I don't think I've ever felt a more positive change in terms of the relationships between organisations.
Mm.
And that's not just between secondary care and primary care, but between the voluntary sector as well. So in Western Supermare, they've got an integrated mental health team. They've got all sorts of teams working in there now, and they're working in a really fluid and collaborative way to try and reach out to the population that can't access mental health services.
And should we talk about it? So the integrated community mental health team is something that North Somerset is one of the first in Bristol, North Somerset and South Gloucester set up, I think, in Western. And I think there's a number of players within that team, aren't there? It's not just mental health.
No,
so who's involved?
So there's many teams alongside healthcare. You've also got the local authority working in there with a number of other voluntary services as well. So I think Second Step are in there. Well, I think there's too many for me to name right now. They've got a number of people and organisations working in the same room.
And I've seen a case study out of the work that team are doing, and where traditionally NHSC problem, NHS fix problem, was probably how we went about our business in our silos. This team had a gentleman who presented to general practice with anxiety. and some problems. The shared caseload in the group of professionals and voluntary sector described how they supported him, and they found out that his mother had passed away 2 years ago. His mother was the carer because he had learning difficulties. He was a hoarder, so the house was quite full of things, and there was some hygiene issues there. And the shared caseload, through citizens' advice, wrote off the debt. Because of the situation, the local authority addressed the back payments on council tax that had been missed. A voluntary sector charity cleared the house and supported that agenda. And there was a befriending service that connected him and joined him up with his community. All of which health colleagues were sat there thinking, I'm not sure, short of medicating or thinking that we'd put a sticky plaster on this, that we could have helped him in a way that this new way of working has probably addressed. And I think that's the opportunity, isn't it?
And I think the more people get to know about the new way of working, not just for the public, but for organisations as well, that you'll see more people coming in.
Mm.
I didn't know that Avon Fire and Response Service, for example, have a hoarding service. So they have a dedicated group of personnel that can go out and work with people who hoard because it is a significant fire hazard, and obviously they want to...
And I didn't know that either.
And they want to reduce the amount of risk attached with hoarding. They've got specially trained people who can go into people's houses, not just remove everything, with that person's capacity, but doing a very sensitive, cathartic way, and at the same time they can fit hard white fire alarms into the accommodation as well. But the more other organisations hear about this, the more they're keen to come in and help.
Exactly.
Because it is it could or should be a very joined up approach to helping people deal with their problems.
And the staff who I've been working with and hearing from, who are involved in this new integrated way of working, take so much more satisfaction.
Yeah.
You don't see somebody for 15 minutes, half an hour, and they leave your room and you never know what happens, because there's this shared journey and seeing it through to the solving of the root cause rather than addressing the presenting symptoms.
It seems to be an eye-opener for all of us in terms of that relationship between organisations. Certainly from a management point of view, I feel I can call on colleagues from other organisations to get things resolved quite quickly.
Yeah.
And that seems to have been accomplished through the work that we've done in the relationship building.
Well, let's talk about that. So, John, you sat on our board, our North Somerset WoodSpring Partnership Board, and I just wonder if you maybe describe from your mental health role and being part of that, what your experience of that integrated joining up felt like.
It's on a number of different levels. As I said, I think it's been positive. You can use quite what would seem like superficial examples. So colleagues who work in Serona, they've asked AWP if they can use this building to comfort breaks, essentially, which was never a done thing in the past. And yeah, that's been fine.
Yeah.
There's been an age-old problem in healthcare. You've commented on silo working. So for however long I can remember, partners have been talking about primary care needs. So someone's got a mental health need, and as with AWP, they see that as a primary health need.
Mm-hmm.
And if they've got another problem, like leg ulcers, for example, it's difficult to get another partner organisation to see them for that problem. That's resolving. We had that situation not so long ago, and I called up my colleague in Serona and said, can you help us with this? Yes, not a problem. I'll put you in touch with so-and-so. And it was resolved within a week, pretty much. And I'm hoping as we go on, that those barriers can get to come down further, essentially.
Yeah. And there was a culture that... It wasn't long ago somebody would have said no.
Not long at all.
Yeah. What do you think is the work that we've done together that has enabled that to happen?
I think much of it has been around human relationship building.
Mm-hmm.
Most definitely. The more we speak with our colleagues from other partnerships, the more we understand what their organisations offer and can offer and how we can problem solve together. I think that's a big part of it and shouldn't be undersold.
It's really helpful. And I just walked the building with you and we walked past the memory service, of which I only found out last week. There's a telephone number that general practice can call at any point about any individual that they're working with, where they can get some expertise into their decision making to know what the best course of action is.
Yeah, and I think there's another substantial example of where we've been able to partnership work more effectively in the last sort of 6 months. So we've been trying to get some training off the ground with our colleagues in primary care around dementia diagnosis for years, literally for years. We've just rolled some out in WoodSpring. It's gone very well.
Really?
And it's not just about the delivery of the training. Again, it's about sharing our experiences and what each other's services can offer for the patient. It's another good example.
So I've asked lots of people, meeting them in these podcasting episodes about if there were a common myth that you would want to bust here and now about your job or industry. And there's been some interesting ones. Last week, Matt Lenny was describing how public health isn't the fun police. They're not trying to stop people drinking alcohol and eating cakes and smoking, and there's good logic behind that. But I wondered for mental health if there was something that colleagues should understand.
So there's a number of things I could say in response to that. I think you mentioned at the beginning, it's quite a taboo area. There's quite a lot of stigma attached to it, and the public's perception of mental health and mental health care is quite negative. Probably stuck in the dark ages, where I guess the public think that services have quite an unsympathetic view towards people who need to access mental health services. I can only speak from my experience. One of the reasons I do the job, it's only very recently that I've kind of stopped doing frontline patient care roles, done that for such a long time because of the fulfillment it gives me working in these services, because more often than not, you see and meet people who are desperate and not filled with a lot of hope, and you can quite literally see people come out the other side. I remember I went on a training day a couple of years ago, and a new GP trainee was on the training with us, and she was asking, you know, how can you work with people who have no hope? And my colleague's response was that that's exactly what we work with. Everybody has some degree of hope, and with our experience and working collaboratively with service users and their families, we can help things turn around, and that is really, really, really rewarding.
That's really powerful, isn't it? There are some, even in myself, some fixed ideas of what you think a mental health organization looks like, and it usually involves padded rooms and keys, and I'm walking around here today and it's just not like that.
No.
It's just not like that. So if somebody wanted to know more about AWP or the services you run in North Somerset, where would be a good place for them to understand more or go and have a look?
So you can access our website. We've got a website, AWP. Other than that, we do public engagement events as well. Certainly pre-pandemic, I did quite a lot of visits to local colleges, local schools, doing quite a lot of that myth busting, trying to break down stigmas. There's no doubt about it. We need to switch the new generation onto working in mental health, because it is such a rewarding job, and we need nurses, doctors, physiotherapists, all of those disciplines to work in our organisation. Yeah. So we've done quite a lot of public facing events where we've engaged.
And we'll find out about those afterwards, and I'll pop them in the show notes so people can have a look for themselves. And for those listening, so hopefully we're talking about voluntary sector colleagues, people working in general practice, people working in Sirona, people involved in the local authority. What would you hope would be their biggest takeaway from our conversation today?
I think much of it is around the themes that you've already talked about. We are accessible. I think sometimes primary care doesn't feel that mental health services are accessible.
There have been traditional tolerances because of workload that have separated us, haven't they? But we've just said in sense of memory service, telephone lines and joint working in community mental health.
So I think there's a much... So even pre the community mental health framework, we were already engaged with primary services to try and help understand each other's point of view and each other's services can offer. So our PCLS... primary care liaison service, which is the assessment service for AWP. They've been engaged quite a lot with our primary care colleagues around what they can and can't manage in terms of volume. So I think that work was being done, but certainly the community mental health framework has shored that up, made it a much more formal process. Even though it is very much a relational thing, it's made it more formal and given us an opportunity to develop, really.
And we're talking about a second half of North Somerset having a similar integrated team, hopefully run from this building at a point in the near future, which will only grow what we're describing in sense of the reach and for what is quite an ageing population that's going to really benefit from some of the services that you provide here. Well, listen, John, thank you for your time. I know you're busy and clinically active, so I'm really grateful for your time and your real honesty in the sense of that was really emotional, how powerful it is to work in mental health and how rewarding that is. So thank you.
Thank you.